So this is communism, hard and soft. It could be regarded as one of the major misfortunes of the present that so much money is being spent on educational hardware. The mistake is of environmental scope. The young of many countries continue daily to manifest revulsion against the traditional effort to contain the educational processes in the bureaucratic and homogenized spaces of existing schools and colleges and curricula. There is no conspiracy behind this student revolt. They themselves cannot verbalize the causes of their unrest. Their response is the result of a percept, not a concept. Young and old alike now live in a unique service environment of information. Actually, he says, young and old alike now live in unique service environments of information. It is a many-layered environment. The inner layers are the familiar electric networks of telegraph and telephone and radio and TV. The outer layers are jet and satellite. The planet is now contained inside a man-made environment and has become an archaeological museum in itself. The planet is a campus. To go on building 19th century spaces for the storing and dissemination of classified information is perfectly natural. It is also fatal. In the midst of new technological environments, men flee to the old forms for reassurance. The young feel no such need. The young accept the new as naturally as their parents repose on the old. Meantime, the cost of reassuring the old and alienating the young, that's in brackets, and alienating the young, by the construction of classrooms and libraries is a very great waste indeed. The book, When Microfilm for Instant Electric Retrieval, is as available in Greenland as in Hawaii. Every page in every great library of the world can now be read anywhere in the world at any time of night or day. The amount of hardware in such electric retrieval systems is puny and becomes steadily more insignificant. All the holdings of all the libraries can be made available on any TV set and published or imprinted, in brackets, on paper for private use from any TV set where there is need for such service. In the Middle Ages, the scholastic philosophy acquired its name from the fact that books were too few and expensive and also too slow for educational use. Scholasticism is from scholia in quotes, meaning leisure. The scholastics were oral dialoguers who had memorized all the basic philosophic components needed in their dialogue. Each schoolman had to be an encyclopedia of such lore. They then went to work, in brackets, Operation Research style, to solve new problems by banging old cliches together, much as Watson and his colleagues did in approaching the DNA problem, in brackets, see the double helix, title of a book. Paradoxically, we are back in the scholastic methodology, but for exactly the opposite reasons. For the schoolmen, books were too few and too slow. For us, there are too many and they issue too quickly. Information overload now drives us to pattern recognition again. It has often been pointed out that environmental saturation of perception blinds people to the operations in which they are most involved. The Bell telephone has never studied the changes in the human order resulting from their service environment. The same is true of Container Corporation, Pan Am, or any business whatever. Since businesses using new technologies never note the environments they create, they are always astonished at the effect of these numerous new environments on their particular environment. The total change in the world of concert hall and entertainment resulting from the recording industry is fairly well known. The changes in the uses of radio since TV have been ignored. Read that again. The changes in the uses of radio since TV have been ignored. The total change in the child's perceptual habits since TV has resulted in great new learning difficulties in the classroom. TV involvement has pushed the child face flat on the printed page. The TV child now has visual habits utterly unsuited to reading the conventional printed page. In brackets, as revealed in the work of Arthur Hurst and others. See footnote page 6. Let's see what that is. Footnote page 6. Arthur Hurst in the Canadian Journal of Optometry wrote an article, volume 25, number 4, April 1964. He also wrote in volume 1, number 4, April 1968 of the Journal of Learning Disabilities. Okay, back to the next paragraph or section. The entire textbook industry is a branch of hardware desperately in need of redesigning since TV. The TV child works in the classroom and out of the classroom with his eyes within 1 to 6 inches of the printed and written page, a distance utterly inconsistent with reading or learning. The schools and texts are still designed on the assumption that children visualize a page at a distance of 10 or 12 inches. It's perhaps pointless to mention matters of such great scope with a view to obtaining any useful action. The vested interests of millions of people in older patterns of perception, production, and administration may well be incapable of adjusting to changes of such scope. The dinosaur reached its most magnificent dimensions just prior to extinction. It does no harm to know that technological changes requiring total reprogramming of existing human perception have already occurred. People can at least brace themselves for the shock that will follow. It is like seeing the puff from the cannon's mouth before feeling the blast. The inability of people to make the transition from hardware service environment to software or information environment, from packaged land to echo land, as it were, includes all of the above problems as well as a host of others. Remember, he said, it does no harm to know that technological changes requiring total reprogramming of existing human perception have already occurred. Then he has a new section called An Outrageous Hypothesis. I am going to present an outrageous hypothesis by way of probing these matters. I have tried it person to person on large groups of top business executives. I have presented it to numerous individuals in economics, in political science, and sociology. I have never had a single demur or criticism from any of these people concerning this outrageous hypothesis. Instead, I have had their total assent. It is this consensus of agreement with my hypothesis that fills me with doubt concerning it. I'm going to state it briefly here in the hope of hearing some adequate critique directed against it. Here's the hypothesis. By 1830, England was a communist country. Why? Because by that time, the volume of hardware services available to ordinary working people far exceeded the means of any private wealth to provide on an individual pattern such services. Do that again. Because by that time, the volume of hardware services available to ordinary working people far exceeded the means of any private wealth to provide on an individual pattern such services. By 1830, publishing and news services, postal services, transportation services, and marketing services were beyond the dreams of any emperor who ever lived to provide for himself or his subjects. I am saying that Karl Marx was born into a communist world of vast communal services on an environmental scale. These were all based on industrial hardware. Gutenberg had provided the matrix and the method for all such hardware services. The matrix is fragmentation, and the method is repetition. Read that again. The matrix is fragmentation, and the method is repetition in the Gutenberg era. Marx was totally unaware of this environment as a factor in his theorizing, just as he was unaware of the commercial telegraph, which began in 1844, as a major factor in creating the new software communism that lay ahead. Marx paid no attention to technology, although he felt a romantic distaste for the industrial world and dreamed of a tribal communism such as that enjoyed by primitive societies. He lived idealistically in the previous century that had glorified the, quote, noble savage, unquote, while building steam engines and hardware. The hardware communism of the English 19th century was scarcely experienced by any other country. Many countries in the world today, for example, Russia and China, are still striving to achieve a 19th century hardware service environment. Less literate countries bypass the 19th century and move into the 20th century. To push a hypothetical probe into the age of 20th century software, in brackets or information environments, it is only natural to say that the wealth of the services available via the new software enormously exceeds the 19th century hardware wealth. I read that again. To push a hypothetical probe into the age of 20th century software or information environments, it is only natural to say that the wealth of the services available via the new software enormously exceeds the 19th century hardware wealth. Whereas the 19th century paid piecemeal for its services, most of the 20th century software services are for free, in brackets like radio and TV programs, or the cost is merely nominal, as with telegraph and telephone. Then in capital letters, the effect of software environments is tribal communism. Note that. The effect of software environments is tribal communism. This consists of a paradoxical reversal into the most primitive forms of human association, resulting from pushing advanced technological forms to their point of reversal. In brackets, for example, the short skirt in the 20s was individual and sexy. The miniskirt is tribal and non-erotic. End of bracket. Then in capital letters, the U.S. is by far the most tribally communistic society that ever existed. Then McLuhan writes, why should the United States be so alarmed about the, quote, rising tide of communism, unquote, in countries that have never even had a 19th century? The only explanation I can myself discover for the universal unawareness of these two forms of communism, or the services environments, for example, or i.e. hardware and software, is the huge screen created by bookkeepers, accountants, and lawyers. Massive fragmentation of this kind prevents any awareness of service environments, but it doesn't prevent these service environments from an incessant pressure upon our sensory and psychic lives. Bookkeeping and accountancy are themselves part of the old hardware service environment that grew up with Gutenberg technology. So I'm going to go back and read the previous paragraph, two paragraphs back. Why should the United States be so alarmed about the rising tide of communism in countries that have never even had a 19th century? The only explanation I can myself discover for the universal unawareness of these two forms of communism, or the service environments, i.e. hardware and software, is the huge screen created by bookkeepers, accountants, and lawyers. They're the agents of visual space. Bookkeepers, accountants, and lawyers. Massive fragmentation of this kind, bookkeepers, accountants, and lawyers, prevents any awareness of service environments, but it doesn't prevent these service environments from an incessant pressure upon our sensory and psychic lives. Bookkeeping and accountancy are themselves part of the old hardware service environment that grew up with Gutenberg technology. The natural tendency for everybody to go on doing whatever they happen to be doing does not offer any adequate means of navigation in a period of major technical innovation. Perhaps our own fear of the, quote, communist enemy, unquote, at home is prompted by an intuitive recognition of our software environment as communist in character, and thus our desperate attempts to eliminate him from our society are a misdirected effort to forestall the inevitable effects of the environment. I'll read that last paragraph again. Perhaps our own fear of the communist enemy at home is prompted by an intuitive recognition of our software environment as communist in character, and thus our desperate attempts to eliminate him from our society are a misdirected, in quotes, effort to forestall the inevitable effects of the environment. And that, So that is the end of...
All participants are now unmuted.
Six.
Yeah, there are so many things I really liked. I didn't know that the scolia means leisure.
Right.
I really liked that, that the scholars had the leisure to learn.
That's what you
learn.
That's what you experience every day.
Yes,
the slack of
being a scholar.
Yes, the leisure of processing information that you enjoy.
Yes, and I also was thinking about these fantasies of the total accumulation of knowledge, that men were always striving to have the total library. There is a story by Borges. It's called The Library of Babel. And that's like an infinite library where they have like hexagons. The rooms are like hexagons. And they have all possible books. And the librarians are like crazy. and they believe in a messianic figure that is called the Bookman, and they're looking for him in this library because he's supposed to know. And they also start destroying books because they think that's not real knowing, and it's. But yes, I think in a way that was the goal, to return to the knowing, and that was what the illumination meant to the encyclopedist, like to know everything there
and
is to know
the last word?
Available. Encyclopedist.
Encyclopedist, right.
Encyclopedist.
Yeah. Encycloclopper.
Yes, I am Babylonian. Sometimes I say things in German or French, and I think it's English.
So okay, look at this. Visual space creates a frame. You see pictures of that in The Medium is the Massage. So this visual frame, which is a container, and so science starts trying to find out what is the substance inside the frame.
Hmm.
You know, that space and time are inside a frame. And then Einstein in the electric age broke the frame, and space and time are resonantly everywhere, not contained. And that brings in the making of space and time. So this frame idea... Remember, the encyclopedias come in as the newspaper is taking over. And I was telling this to somebody the other day. The frame is the container. And so they thought they could contain categories and printed information in a box. Then it became a library. But they had the illusion that they could contain all knowledge, finally. And that was the effect of visual space. The container idea of knowledge is disappearing with the digital world.
Yes, and I also think it's very interesting what he says, the bookkeepers, the accountants, and the lawyers were actually the first that created the written systems because they needed to keep records in Babylon
right.
and Sumer. All the first written things were laws, bookkeepers, the accounting. And then after that, the priest also started like writing myths or things that were programming the environment of what
right.
they needed people to believe.
And then you look at what the writing systems did in society. It's totally logical why the societies went that way. And then it's totally logical when the printing press came in, what happened. Then the telegraph, then the electric age. There's a whole logic, which McLuhan calls the laws of media, that's a great vision of the history of culture. You see that the wars and all that, every technology creates a war, are backwards rearview mirror responses to something that's going to change society in a way that most society won't like, inevitably. You couldn't stop the process. And if you got really mad at visual space, which a lot of the 19th century romantic poets and symbolists got pissed off at, if you understood the laws of media, you would see that would be solved by radio and television, creating a whole different dynamic. So even the disservices of media, if you know this pattern, will be canceled.
Yes, and
so
that's why...
That leads to a relax and allow. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, that's why Madeleine will say it's easy to say if you are a princess. But it's more the awareness of that, of the median ecology.
Right.
You see that... We tend to reduce everything to the physical and to the outer kingdom, but this is a very limited vision we had during the fallen state. And you are actually helping us retrieve with this metanoia of all the media ecology and all these things you do, like McLuhan and Joyce and Nostradamus and the Bible and other things, is to retrieve the awareness of all the other bodies and all the other worlds and all the unlimited possibilities we really have. And there is no way to control that. So that's why I was doing this series of Bobsoletting the Illuminati, because there is no way to control. Only when you you are reduced to the visual space.
But you can understand the process. Media ecology is in the world of social mortar, and that's a way of publicly of getting a relaxational process going. Now, you have here McLuhan in page 2 predicts the internet. He says, see the first part. He already did it in 66, but this is 2 years later, and he spells it out a bit differently. He says, the book, when microfilm for instant electric retrieval, is as available in Greenland as in Hawaii. Every page in every great library of the world can now be read anywhere in the world at any time of night or day. Now, you couldn't do that technically. He was probably in touch with Northern Bell through his friend Gordon Thompson, and they were telling him, hey, we're on the edge of making this new technology. This is what it's going to do. So he would talk about it as if it was already available, and that would piss off some reviewers of his work. But look at it. He's saying the book, when it's microfilm for instant electric retrieval, is available everywhere. The amount of hardware in such electric retrieval systems is puny and becomes steadily more insignificant. All the holdings of all the libraries can be made available on any TV set, which we call a computer today, right? And published or imprinted on paper for private use from any TV set where there is need for such service. I mean, that's the internet.
Yes, and when you understand that, you understand why, for example, you dissolved the Secret Council of 10.
Right,
because all this big data is... Yeah, how can you control big data, generating more data? There is no more control.
Well, the only way you can control it is turning off the environment. You can control television by turning it off. The society says, okay, we're not going to have TV for the next 6 months. Then you go back to the radio effects, which is a different medium.
But switching off the technology will switch everything off.
Right. Everything would go back to a slower...
They cannot do that.
Yeah, they're not going to do it. And yet the technology has come to a point now where it's basically not... For visually biased people, and maybe for acoustic biased people, it does not make sense anymore. The logic of the whole history has evaded them. They didn't know the logic of media ecology, but now the effect of information overload and information fragmentation and machines speaking on their own behalf, a lot of people can't find a aphorism, a statement in their own language for their mind to repeat.
Yes, for me it was also the correlation when you explained to me the quadrophrenia, because then I understood this feeling of confusion I had.
Right.
I think that's part of the healing too, of the metanoia you do. At the end we go beyond the quadrophrenia to the recollected lucidity, as I call it.
Right. We put on quadrophrenia after that. You make yourself interesting to other people. See, the whole thing about the mind-body split and saying, okay, the mind's causing all this chatter in myself. I got to suppress that, get rid of that, emphasize the now. Without understanding the media dynamics, that's such a childish limited concept. Because what they mean by mind are print environments and newspaper environments. What they mean by body is the flow of the electric media. And if you don't have the perception of those factors, you're always going to be stupid in what you do. I mean, you're going to get all kinds of accidents happen. Which is what history is. Accidents. Everybody, you know, regrets the wars. How they start. The Russians can't figure out why they accepted Stalin for so long. And if you don't use the media dynamics, it makes no sense. And you end up confused in social mortar. And you don't, no matter how much you yearn to have your individual sovereign word power, and you read books that suggest it timidly, if you haven't figured out the dynamics of social mortar, you're not going to ascend. And that's what maybe what the Bible predicted. I mean, that's what John was doing. He says, you people, and I said this, you're forming your churches and starting to proselytize. You don't know the effect of what your media are going to do. Take a look at how you're communicating, what the means are. That was one of the reasons John the Revelator, spelled out his stuff. He's a media ecologist.
This is, and I think it's very revealing that in Greek, Bible means book. That's what it means. It's a media.
Did you say, Bible means book. It's a medium, right?
And Bob, and you mentioned...
Now let me just say this sentence. Back then, the average oral peasant considered somebody who could read, his face had a new invisible helmet on it, like an eagle's beak. They have interesting way they describe the literate person. It was as weird as somebody who has a Google glass, you know, walks into some place. It bothers other people. That's what the book was, strange clothing. So, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, you read something about the matrix is fragmentation. What was the second part of that?
Okay.
The matrix and the matrix.
The matrix is fragmentation, and the method is repetition. So you're fragmenting, finding new categories like they do with matter, endlessly finding new particles, and you then repeat it, print it, so everybody can memorize it. And another part, I should say it better, the method is repetition. When science would do an experiment, and if you could repeat it, that seemed to have the echo of truth. And it was just an effect of the eyeball and the effect of the book, that books repeated themselves. So then, because this new environment had books at all that looked the same, and that would shock pre-literate people, they said, what? These two things are the same. They'd never seen anything the same. Then they said, okay, if we can repeat sameness or repetition, we are close to a fact or to a certitude. That's really profound. The whole scientific thinking that repetition is a sign that we know something. And Ion began by pointing out all the non-repetitive anomalies in reality. And then now it's happening in CERN. They can't find anything repeating itself. So isn't that amazing? Repetition became the simulation of certainty, of confidence, of a belief that never changed. That's all scientists is. When you know that, you start listening to people saying, well, you're not scientific, or blah, 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 blah. They don't even know the characteristics of what they're talking about.
Am I audible?
Yes.
Ah.
Go ahead.
I wanted to say that, remember, Ion also said mythode.
Oh, Bart, I was going to say earlier tonight, we never hear from Bart because I played your song.
I heard you play that. That was That was, it was Have Gun, Will Travel, Salad Days.
Right.
Yeah, and
but
that's...
the point is that you haven't been here in months. Did you have a problem in your family? Did you have a problem with Ion? Did you decide you'd rather just listen to the show after it was over and then, you know, document the contents? Because you do a good job of retrieving aspects of the show for people on dupes.
The so short what, answer to all of that is yes.
Yeah, all those were factors.
Right, right, right.
So why are you here now?
I don't know. Why are any of us here?
Well, we know why we're here. We understand the value of being here.
Right, I understand. That's why I'm here. But yeah, there. Who knows what there are certain factors in someone's experience in life that can interject themselves and. But no, that's why I'm here, because I realize the value of this engagement, and it's not that I haven't realized that. It's just other things have intervened. But
so what was your point?
So I've been on the phone for like an hour, over an hour now, just listening, and just talking about what you're adding to what you're saying here about the method. Remember, Ion said, use the word myth-ode. There's a myth-ode to our madness.
Yeah.
And there was something else I wanted to add, too, but I figured you would ask where I was, but it just things happen, and...
Okay, we've done that. What else did you want to talk about? Yeah, the myth-ode, he was punning on M-Y-T-H?
Yeah. Yeah, myth-ode to our madness.
That's pretty good.
But there was something else I wanted to add. Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Well, let me just say about myth.
Yeah.
McLuhan defines myth as an encapsulation of a complex process. So the writing, the effect of writing and the phonetic alphabet, whoever noticed that, they ended up with a statement about King Cadmus. And it says something like, he sowed the dragon's teeth and up sprang armed men, warriors or something. So the dragon's teeth was the fragmented visual space of the phonetic alphabet, and then that caused more militarization or spreading over visual space. So the statement, King Cadmus sowed the dragon's teeth and up sprang, militaries. That's not the exact wording, but it's an encapsulating a process that went over several hundred years. That is McLuhan's definition of myth. It doesn't mean it's false. It certainly isn't a fact that later literate science would say about the details of who, what, where, and what that visual writing and fragmentation brought in. So McLuhan said, I think, that the Greek word or the Latin word for myth was word. So it's interesting to think about that, too. Words are us encapsulating our experience. It's a mythic process to speak because there's so much data going on in all your senses. And probably if you didn't talk, you'd become aware of all that other stuff. And that might lead to parallel worlds and dreaming awake. But it's very useful to understand how he uses the word myth. So, myth-ode, that's... an interesting statement by Ion in light of what McLuhan said about myth. So, yeah, go ahead.
There was something else that I wanted to add to that, but I lost it. If you could go, what were a couple of statements you made before I started talking?
The matrix is fragmentation, and the method is repetition.
Okay.
The matrix would be the media, the environment of a whole bunch of people using the book. You don't have an environment if you just have one book, but when thousands of people in a populated area are using one medium, then it becomes an environment or a matrix, a form.
I lost it, but the statement about the science being a repetition was that's a very profound, simple observation.
Right.
I was going to add. I was going to say it confuses that matter even more to have the scientists. I guess that's what it is. They have created that virus, and it's when people see repetition, they consider it science. Like when the scientists are able to repeat experiments, that creates
certainty. And that would be true under literate conditions. But when you get into the electric age, and especially now, with increasing weirdnesses like sinkhole, or just things happening so fast that you wouldn't have time to repeat anything, the repetition is part of a slower age. So we have a new definition of science, or of truth, certainty. And McLuhan called it the new science, the laws of media. You know, we don't realize how more sophisticated we are compared to people 200 years ago, 300 years ago. That's in the world of social media, social mortar, social clothing. People, it doesn't refer to ascension. You know what I mean? Anybody could do that at any time.
Well,
in the world of language.
When you take science to its ultimate or state or a finer state, then you have the uncertainty principle, where that throws everything prior to that out the window.
Yeah, but look at that. Why did Einstein discover that absolute space and absolute time were no longer valid, or that light curved, or the uncertainty principle? They were just conceptualizations by a literate society with the scientist specialists dominating a certain aspect of that. Why were things uncertain? Because now they were in the radio environment, an electric environment, which totally contradicted the dynamics of the literate environment. So those physics principles just stated what was happening on the media ecology level.
Right, the particle or the wave properties.
Right.
The confusion there.
Right. Yeah. That would be electric waves up juxtaposed to the old print particles. See, it's amazing when you look at science. The new science really is knowing the hidden ground of why scientists came up with certain principles in their day. It's not silly. They weren't wrong. They just had different matrices molding their perception.
Or they hadn't taken...
There has been also a disservice of this replay as a method of argumentation and proving things, because now corporations or governments say, okay, we need a study that proves this. And then they go and do the experiment that they say, yeah, this is the proof that this is so, like this. And it's not truth. It's all manipulated.
Right, because that literate repetition form of science is so old now, it has to be retrieved, totally programmed and manipulated by corporations who are saying, well, these people, they used to be visually biased. They probably still are. They still send their kids to school to get programmed by print. So we can keep that meme going. But more and more, over the last 20, 30 years, people realize how corrupt and manipulated that effort by corporations who are not literate, who are post-literate environments, pretending they're patriots by hoiking up the myth of science. And the myth would be a former way of encapsulating experience. And they did it through laboratory repetition. That was their myth. Not meaning it was false. That's the way they encapsulated their experience.
Yes, and
so how do people act today?
I really like scandalous, like they believe that fluor is good against cavities, or that milk is good for your health, and calcium actually doesn't allow magnesium to be absorbed.
Right.
So everybody believes that because it's written somewhere, and they believe the book.
I was just going to say that they're specialized also. They don't take the broader environment into account.
They become what they beheld. They follow the dictates of the technology they're involved with and usually making money from. So they can't look at the other environments. They don't want to look at the other new environments and their effects because it threatens their their position of security. And you can see as everything gets more and more chaotic over the last 50 years as more and more technologies come in faster. That's why all the senior citizens are on all these drugs. They can't function anymore. Their minds can't notice what's going on, so they put them on drugs so they can just function as a robot. That's not evil. That's an effect of the newer technologies. You could say those guys making the new technologies and just dumping them on society, they're the evil ones. They're the war makers. They're the aggressive people. Because they don't want to look at the effect. They say, oh, I invented this, I'm going to market it, and we're going to make millions, and I'll be happy. I don't care, you know. Bill Gates didn't think about that when they discovered the whatever they discovered in 76, 77, right? Those early processes in computing, and neither did Steve Jobs. And the society collectively does not want to question the inventors. Americans don't. The Arabs do. Every other society in the world, pre-literate society, are pissed off at us dumping technologies on them.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, can those effects be predetermined or, what's the word, predicted?
Well, McLuhan thought they could.
Yeah.
McLuhan said once you had a broader outline, you could. Certainly, but that's all the human phase. We haven't had a humanity in charge or involved with this for the last 30, 40 years. It's been the Android meme phase where the machines do it for themselves, of themselves, by themselves, you know, for whatever that amazing statement was, you know. Democracy is for, of, and by the people. Well, the Android meme is of and for and by the machinic.
You said something that I found very interesting, but I don't remember the exact words. Like the Android meme was doing this metanoia, this revision.
Yes. The information retrospective is done by the machines now. You go to the Discovery Channel and any of the History Channel or news. Anybody who looks into those stories in a slower analytic way will find out that there's no truth based on print in those archives of Discovery Channel. There's just new photography about processes that are interesting. And so what was I going to say? So okay, what did you say? I was responding to you, Roxana.
Yeah, we were talking about how the Android meme is doing a revision.
Oh, yeah, the retrospective. The retrospective, the repenting that the Android meme plays on you through Discovery Channels, anybody with a literate sensibility can go and show how general the statements are, that it's not accurate history. It's not accurate in the old literate detailed sense. So it's basically from the human level, totally fantastic and an illusion, what the Android meme replays as, what Croker has some good terms for this, recombinant history, virtual history. It is not the history that humans dealt with, because history was a product of literacy. So it's interesting that there's no requirement to stop making documentaries about the Kennedy assassination. Every channel at some point will make a documentary and pick some little angle that they think is accurate or different and make a documentary. Nobody's going to stop the process and mark and judge which documentary was most accurate.
Yes, and they also had to feed the technologies, the media. There is more need to more of creating more content.
Yeah.
Because the broadcasting is nonstop, and there are many, many other channels now than before.
This is why McLuhan said, "Well, we're not creative. We study the creative process." And he said that there are more creative people, more creativity in the 20th century than it ever happened ever, all through history, all through phases of time. So you get this massive amount of creativity going on with everybody making this shit and dumping it on the markets. and there's no ecology there. It just creates chaos. So actual, the big dream in high schools is to be creative. That's what they, that's the highest ideals in the schooling system. And creativity is actually being an asshole. So actually, I used to always say, I'm not interested in being creative. I'm interested in understanding how to live in this ridiculous situation.
I want to be a creative scholar.
Yes, and you are being one just by talking here.
That's my gig.
Bob, right. But you just said
it's a joke.
I know, I get it. But the thing is, you can't be a creative scholar in the literate academia place here, because we're electric media. We're a different kind of scholarship. Engaging eye is a different kind of, quote, leisure or scholarship. But you'd have to do some other method if you wanted to be accepted in literate scholarship. But the rewards of literate scholarship are getting less and less.
Because it's like your leisure is being a profit.
Say that again. Your nature. Get back. Get off that damn speakerphone.
No, I was lying on my button. I have to.
Yeah, speaking from the distance. Yeah, masturbating. Yes. Lying there masturbating and projecting your jism through the speaker. It doesn't work. Yeah, okay. What were you saying?
Yes, that...
Nature is profit.
No, that your hobby is to be a prophet.
Yes,
your
yes.
Creativity, leisure, your new scholarship.
That's right. Now, that's what Quadrophenia is. I can, and many people do this, they take 20 years to get their PhD. In making yourself acceptable in the old Gutenberg environment in writing your PhD is not a major activity in living, but it's something you might want to have under your belt. And so one aspect of Quadrophenia is engaging different environments. So we could have somebody here as a professor engaging us and Ion, and he enjoys it and gets something out of it, but he could drop that and go back and teach school or mark PhDs, you know, on Monday and Tuesday. So Quadrophenia means engaging different media environments and their laws and their biases, as well as the rapidity of new bodies, which are the shrinking of those older media environments. And we are engaged in all kinds of media environments all the time. You know, you just go back.
Are you saying by default?
Parent. Yes, you're a quadriphenic inevitably by default. And that's what Finnegan's Wake is, a satire of the motivated somnambulist, engaging all these environments. It's Humphrey Chimpton Earwicker is engaged and described differently all over the book, and he's an average person in the 20s and 30s putting on all these environments, but doesn't know how to sort of articulate the condition they're in.
Yes, that's why saying in the chat line, sorry, grab your whiskey bottle and hit the nearest person on the head.
Right. And if you look at my chart, I have mythic stage.
Finnegan woke up.
Right. And the whiskey bottle can only be temporary. It's only applicable in each different media environment. Once you're in another media environment, your abilities and skills are different. So mythic stage is a phrase I use, and it means that people today are made up of certain technological preferences. And those technology preferences can range from your food you eat to the kind of cars you use, or whether you use a car, and whether you use the airplane, or do you go hiking with boots, do you do email. You are a collage of technologies, and because technologies are a capsulization of a process, I've got my MacBook here that contains the work and experience of millions of people over, say, 200 years, right? It's all encapsulated into this little box that I could type on and communicate. So every technology is myth as defined by McLuhan. It's an encapsulation of a very complex process that went into making the technology to make that environment happen. So we are fighting with our different mythic stages, our mythic technologies that we prefer against another person or group that prefer other technologies.
And you're saying the hiking boots are mythic?
Yes. Well, they represent, Nike and the latest best hiking boots are a process, an encapsulation of knowledge going back, 1,500 years to the cobblers.
Yeah.
Word is that. A bunch of words we're using here in English is made up of the experiences and talking of thousands of people over thousands of years. And so when I speak a bit of English, that's an encapsulation of all kinds of meanings and reference points that the dictionary shows you.
Okay. There's something I wanted to mention on that while I have it and we're on the subject. I think it was the last payday that you guys were on. You said something to the effect that all words eventually have the same meaning, or they all resolve.
Let me check that.
Okay.
Yeah, you think of something was said in the last page.
No, the last payday.
Oh.
The last payday you were live.
We can't remember that. What happened on that one? That's a long time.
you said something to the effect that because we are eternal and this is we're in eternity, all words and all language have already become resolved, and they all resolve into eventually one meaning. And McLuhan had said something to the effect that maybe eventually when we complete language or come to the end of language, it will all be resolved in one word.
That sounds familiar. There's a couple ideas. I remember talking about this stuff to Zappa, and I don't think it was in the recorded part in 1988. In the unrecorded part, I was talking McLuhan to him to see how he'd respond, and he said, "That sounds like a book I read in high school, a science fiction book where everybody had to just know this one word. If they knew the word, then they were accepted in the society." So that was his sort of non-expert McLuhan mind and interpreting McLuhanism. So he thought it reduced things to one word, or the cultural propaganda of what's the word of the week, and you have to know it, and then you're accepted. You seem to be up to date. That's why people watch news addictively. They have to find out what the words are of the period or the images. Like, what's her name? Sandra. Says, boy, she emailed me. She said, well, there's so much happening the last couple of weeks. We've got to get Ian's opinion. And we knew, I knew she meant this, the gay thing, the Ferguson thing, whatever they are. I don't pay attention. I've become very antisocial. I'm not trying to keep up with the word of the week. But she wants to keep up. She wants Ian's opinion so she can have something to say to her fellow somnambulists that require awareness of this week's concerns to feel like they're sharing a community. Or to feel smarter than other people. Okay, I know all about this. Nobody else does. So if everything's reduced to one word, okay, all technologies are words. But eventually we'll have a little Dick Tracy wristwatch that will contain everything and project everything, that would be using one word. Because the wristwatch is an encapsulation, a mythic stage of millions of laboratory experiments and processes and corporations and industries and mining and coal and everything that went in to keep society going so they could develop that little object. And if that every technology is a word, then, we're more and more going to reduce and come to the point of one word will do everything. But that word, now here's where McLuhan comes in. One day in 1975, I was walking with him, and I quoted William Burroughs to him. I said, Burroughs says, you're a word analyst. He said, that is true, that is correct, if you consider all media the content of the word. He says, bulldozers, airplanes, all these mass environments are actually the content of wording or communication. Well, actually, the Dick Tracy watch will contain a lot of media in it. You know what I mean?
It's like the new Apple Watch.
It'll be the final word. What?
It's like the new Apple Watch that they're promoting now. It's like a Dick Tracy.
I'm also thinking that, in a sense, since all of these technologies originated from the word, and that single first word could be the original word.
Let me add this, Bart. When you say it comes from the word, McLuhan defines it in different places. It's a complex symmetry of gesture. All the senses is the original word. It's not a spoken thing or a written thing. It's actually
it's not the language.
It involves
right.
all the senses. Yeah, it's not just the verbal. It is your body language, your smells, all the stuff, your sensory complexity, sensory mix, is the original word. See? You've got to remember that when you say that.
Right. I had that in mind. Yeah, you're not completing language. You're not in the sense of coming to a final statement, but that's a really good observation. That host of things is the word, the original word and the only word. It's
right. Including ESP. Or what people would say is some kind of intuitive communication going on. McLuhan called it nonverbal mental. That's ESP, nonverbal mental gesture. We're doing ear gesture here, but if you're looking at somebody, you are judging what the vibes are coming off the person. That's your ESP. That's your intuition.
And all of those
part of the definition of word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the do line, you read
the five senses.
Nonverbal.
What'd you say, Roxy?
Nonverbal signals for the tactile.
I don't get the word signals. Nonverbal signals? What's that word?
Signals for the tactile. Not signals for the blank, but for the tactile.
Right.
Oh. Signals is the word you're saying. Signals. I see. Yeah. Nonverbal signals. And signaling, you'll find that certain disciplines will use that word. They'll call everything signaling rather than media communication. Or they'll use the word information in cybernetics. They made a big deal out of the word information. You know what I mean? Back in the 40s and 50s, the Macy conferences. And McLuhan made the word media, but he picked a good word. The cyberneticists try to say, they'll say, everything is information. Which doesn't say anything, really. But at least McLuhan worked out the ratios among different forms of information. So signaling is another term. You'll see it in postmodernism. Different schools, like from Derrida to that German guy, who's that in the... That one in the 80s, Habermas. You got Derrida, School, Habermas. They all take an aspect of communication, and then they say, this is the word you use. That's the container word, the matrix. As McLuhan, the word media, medium is a matrix for all the contents you can throw in it. Other disciplines use another word. And Ion discourages... basing your mind on one word. Okay, what were you saying, Roxy?
Yes, that you say everything is information, becoming.
Right.
So that communication is this becoming of things. The
commune.
Endless. Yeah.
And the more
flow.
You include in your word,
the flow.
Right.
Hey, Bob, there was a mention in the due line about the technological adaptation of human senses. Could you read that? Reread that?
Yeah. Then, you know, this was a skimpy due line. The next one's going to take us a couple of weeks to get through. It's very dense and a lot of material. But let's see. What was that? What was it?
It said technological adaptations of human senses had already occurred, or that's what I thought I heard. I want to rehear that to change sentences.
Oh, yeah, there was that. There we go.
May have started off with hardware and software.
Oh, yeah, here it is. Here it is. It does no harm to know. To know what? That technological change is requiring total reprogramming of existing human perception have already occurred.
Yes.
People can at least brace themselves for the shock that will follow. It's like seeing the puff from the cannon's mouth before feeling the blast. So once you know that technological, if you're going to measure any human change, it's going to come from technologies, and we have enough changes happening so we can now see that. You couldn't see it before. It's too slow. So it does no harm to know that the medium is going to reprogram people, and it's already been doing it for centuries. Then you're ready for future changes when new media come in. In other words, McLuhan is saying the medium is a message, but he's saying this is not something that just is to be known now. It's been the case for centuries. You know, he's saying the technology changes have already occurred. They require total reprogramming of existing human perception caused by technological changes that has occurred many times already. And that's not harmful, he says, to know that.
So I guess the question is...
Let me say this, Bart.
Yeah.
It's almost like McLuhan finally discovered found out a useful knowledge. It was practical. Nobody knew whether they knew was valid or not. It was always debated and argued whether it was applicable. But knowing the medium as a message is the first time sociology, psychology, and all the arts would have actually know something.
So McLuhan mentions
like
the puff of smoke.
Right.
But I guess the question would be, can you recognize that, or do you see an after effect?
Well, you're supposed to understand McLuhan enough that as soon as new technology comes in, you start looking for the effects of it based on its material makeup. So that's what I used to do in CKLN. Be a new innovation, I'd immediately say, okay, what is this a retrieval of? What's it flip into? And no one had ever thought these processes before. But I could do it like as an expert, so it just stunned people. So, and it's a practical prophecy.
Seeing is how the effects, the cloud of smoke has already passed, and you're then into observing the effects, because the effects have already started on you before you've recognized them.
Right. Well, you see the cloud, the puff of smoke, that's the effects preceding the causes, because the actual effect will be the blast that you will feel and hear. That's the effect and affects, you know, AFF and EFF. You could say the affects are your reactions to the feeling. Oh, that was uncomfortable. Oh, I like that. I'm a Scorpio. I like getting bashed around, you know. People don't know how to see the smoke part, which is the effects preceding the cause. The gun blast caused the smoke, but you don't hear the gun blast till a little bit later. So seeing the smoke
and feel
signal,
it, yeah.
Yeah, the feeling is the actual perception of it. But if you know how to see and use your eyes in a non-visual way, looking at the environmental effects that already occurred before, then you can say, well, new effects are coming, and they are shown in the smoke. You know a gun's been exploded if you see the smoke.
Yeah, and that's the confusion in that, I don't know if you call that an aphorism or a... But the... You get tricked into thinking there's a visual element to it, but it's a perception or an anticipation.
The smoke is an erroneous metaphor, but it's a metaphor for the fact that you have to use all your senses and knowledge of previous media, which are extension of your senses, not just visual knowledge. You have to see the environment, which is more than what the eye can see. You could call it an acoustic awareness, which surrounds you, sound which surrounds you. So acoustic societies, pre-lived societies, are naturally ecological. They would kill so many inventors.
So relating that to ion, if ion, we were to consider ion sort of the smoke or the effect preceding the cause.
Yeah.
Or would that, it'd be better?
RNA drops are the smoke. The RNA drops are the smoke for the living water and the bread of life. We know something's coming when we can understand the surround effect of the RNA drops. Oh, okay, they're causing something, and they're not even important compared to what's coming. That's what they are. They're the troubleshooters. The drops are.
Yeah, the smoke is kind of, the RNA drops as the smoke are kind of the warning that there's a shockwave coming.
Yeah, yeah. Because you get shocked by the drops at what they do. And as Ion always says, you ain't seen, heard, or eaten nothing yet.